Hey guys, this week we're giving away the amazing Aeronautica Imperialis Skies of Fire. Two-player starter set for shooty planes. If you want to be in with a chance of winning that, here's what you've got to do. We are having great success with our campaign of getting you guys to share the Weekender across your Facebook. Guys, it's really, really helping. So thank you to everybody that's doing it. So share this video on your Facebook, hit like, and make sure you're subscribed, and we will be picking a lucky winner who's going to walk off with that two-player starter set. And make sure you drop a comment. Right, guys, Weekend starts now. Okay, let's get straight into it. I'm here with my brothers in arms.
Hola.
Jerry and Lloydy. Right. First things first, 2 week mark, countdown on the Spring Clean Challenge. Jerry, Ben, you guys have been kind of keeping an eye on that. Will we give everyone a little bit of a recap on what the Spring Clean Challenge is and what they could win?
So I'll lead off with sort of like the general overview of it all. So the whole sort of focus of the Spring Clean Challenge is running until I think it's June the 20th we're running it until, and then we're going to have a little sort of week to sort of collate everything. So you've got until next week to get all your projects in and stuff, and there's a little bit of a grace period before we find the winners. But the whole idea is that we're trying to find, well, get people to dig out all those old miniatures that have been sitting around, all that old plastic and metal and resin, and sitting down to make a project and show us the sort of process of taking it from that old forgotten thing into something beautiful to play with on the tabletop and show off to all your friends and stuff as well.
So, I mean, here's a big bunch of projects that are currently underway.
Yep.
And everyone's hoping to win one of these vouchers. 50 quid on the On Tabletop store. Woo!
Exactly, yes. So there's four vouchers up for grabs, and they'll be sort of split up into four different categories. So we've got best skill, best idea, and best something or other, which I forgot.
Best tutorial.
Best tutorial, which is on the screen right now.
And best young otter.
And best young otter junior member as well, yes.
So skill is aimed at the folk that have the skills. So we're not too worried about the originality of our project. Never. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about show us your skills.
Yes,
the best idea, we're not so worried about your execution. We're just interested to see, was that a cool idea? Yep. And then best tutorial, it's not necessarily about your skills or your idea. It's about, did you use the project system to be able to help other people do what you did? And to be a young otter, you just
be under 16.
Have less beard than us.
And the sort of final sort of result is going to be based on a mixture of the number of votes received for each of the different projects, plus also our own input as people on the team as well. So one of the key things is that if you see a project and you really like what they've done, go and hit those little buttons and give them some likes for their skill tutorial and stuff, depending on what you think the project deserves. And then we'll all take that into account as well as our own ideas going forward as well.
Yeah.
So if I click into this one, for example, you will see all the entries. See these buttons? See the way people have been smashing them?
Yeah, it'll smash them, Lloyd.
Totaled up here.
Well, smash them.
Let me see. That is skill. Bang, smash. So, yeah, jump in and out of people's projects. See what you like. See if you like the idea. See if you like the tutorial that they put together. Or if it's just a skill-based stuff. This is cracking. We looked at this on the XLVS show a few weeks ago.
We did a community button for that one. Yeah.
So there we go, community button. But if you guys want to do your own project, you can just smash that. Actually, I'll go and do that. So if you go to the project system, right, what you do is you add a project. Obviously, you'll need an account, a free account.
Yeah.
And then you can fill out your details, and then you want to pick down here. See this contest thing? You want to do, where is it? The
Spring Clean Hobby Challenge.
Select that. And that way it'll associate your project in with all the other projects we're looking at. And then it'll be sweet. We'll be able to find you in amongst all the cool projects.
It's been nice seeing people digging out old stuff that they haven't worked on in a long time, or maybe it's been something they bought and then immediately shelved. There's a couple of projects I've seen that were started in 2018 and then sort of revisited in 2019, and then finally in 2020 it looks like they're actually going to get finished off. So
it's, that's a good idea.
So it's been really nice actually just seeing people going, you know what, I will go back to that half abandoned, half forgotten project and actually pull the finger out, get it on the table, done and dusted. So
next year, what we should do is we should see if we can find all projects that haven't had an update in X amount of time, aren't marked as complete, and then just ping the folk on those projects and say, Sprinkling Challenge, resurrect me, baby.
I don't want my inbox filled with spam. I want my unpaid, untouched projects.
Projects coming out of the woodwork going, oh,
a lot of people running into their profiles and clicking complete or cancel.
You know, stick it on hold if you're not planning on going back to it.
It's a good idea. I'm not sure if it's a great idea because Facebook do that to me already. I'll have like a picture of something I've painted and it goes, look what you were painting 2 years ago. I was like,
and it's still not finished.
Yeah, still sitting on it.
If you want to see more about the projects and stuff, you should join our Cult of Games and join us for the XLBS show, because every week we give away three golden buttons. Three people, three. All exciting projects that we're looking at. And we get into all the wee details and we open them up and we smash buttons. It's great crack.
It is
how you become immortalized. You know, you become immortalized as a golden button winner. Mm-hmm. It's that cool. On the topic of the Cult of Games and on the topic of the Spring Clean Challenge, we had our very first underground radio show hit on Wednesday night, a couple of nights ago. And so what it is I get to be DJ for me. So Cult Radio is it's just for cogs, right? When you become a cog, you'll find out how you get in there, okay? But as cogs, we congregate for the Cult Radio. And it's used as a Wednesday night opportunity to push your hobby on, because there's a great forum thread that opens every single week without fail on Tabletop, and it's called the Unofficial Weekender. And basically, it's all that people go into that thread and you make a pledge, and there's a couple of other random questions that are asked. And it just fires everybody up for the week of hobby ahead. Then they post music videos to one another and jokes and all sorts of memes and things like that, and just keep each other going. This fits in kind of midweek as a kind of, if you're going to try and meet your pledge or get involved in it, hit that, tune in for that midweek show. Anyway, on Wednesday night, one of the topics was about Marie Kondoing your collection, okay? In other words, clearing out.
Does this bring you joy? Yeah.
this was the question that I was asking on air, you know, and we had people calling in, and we were talking about this. But one of the ideas that came up from the cultists was a pay it forward, or what I'm now naming a Noel Edmonds swap shop. So we're going to add a channel to the Discord, to the Cult of Games Discord, which will be a swap shop channel, okay? And there's a golden rule in that. Nothing is for sale, okay? So you can all you can do is trade or give away. And the only thing you can recoup is the postage, and you work that out among you. So it is, nothing is for sale in the swap shop. You either give it away or you trade. So that will be opening very soon, and then all Cult of Games members can get access to that, because it was unbelievable the amount of stuff that that all of us have been basically looking at these days and going, you know what, this might have a better home elsewhere. It's, you know, because really it's never going to be utilized here. So it's time to get shot at that. So we can all go in there and Marie Kondo our hearts away and make somebody else happy in the process. Other than that, the show was great. The radio show was brilliant from a perspective of I had a lot of fun. I don't know if anybody else had fun. I've had a few messages from folks saying, yeah, it was a blast, you know, so, and they're looking forward to the next one on Wednesday night. But at least from my perspective, I fair enjoyed it. I got to kick back with a beer, not a particularly strong beer. A 25p a tin, though, you can't complain. And we had tunes, we had chats, we had the spooky segment. It was a real blast. It was a real opportunity for us all to just huddle together, in like a cultist's gentleman room. You could almost smell the pool balls, and it was great. It was great. It was. I really, really enjoyed it, and I think it as an ongoing, what shall we call it, cultist meetup. It's going to be an absolute blast. So, I'm already looking forward to next week, and I'm beavering away on the playlist.
What time on the Wednesday does it kick off?
Kicks off at 8 p.m. BST. Okay, so what I do is I send out a super secret email with all of the time zones and everything like that that's listed in it. So if you're a cultist, make sure and check your inboxes for that. If it's landed in your spam, you tell them, how dare you? That's cult messaging. That's cult communique. That's not spam. And yeah, watch out for that. So that has the details of the hows and the whys and the wheres to access it. But I'm here. I'm getting into proper DJ mode. It was, we got our swing on, we got our tunes going, and yeah, it was really good.
Are you going to start wearing No Dad jumpers just like Noel Edmonds did?
Oh yes, man. Oh, but man, and what do you see when I start doing my charity works? It's going to be, I think it's going to be a great piece of crack.
Is there a catch up?
Yes. So cultists within the Discord and stuff like that can find a downloadable version of it, because I do record the show, and as soon as the show is over, literally within about 20 minutes of the show being over, I had the catch-up version of it sitting there for anybody that, you know, maybe time zone or whatever didn't suit. They were able to go and download that. So, man, it just was a lot of fun. It really was. And it was nice to... Most of us within the Cult of Games, we're an eclectic bunch. We really are an eclectic bunch. But we're appreciative of each other's tastes in music. So it was really interesting, the journeys, the musical journeys that we were able to go between the conversations when we, you know, people started to chuck in requests and things like that, and I check it. We have a licensed set of music that we can utilize. So I then go hunting, and I go on a grand hunt to see if I can find it. Or some weird mix version of it, which is often the case. You know, that some strange 2009 Ibiza mix. so some of the best rock you've ever heard has been redrummed to death. And it's still cool. It is still cool. Like on Wednesday night, we went through a journey through the 90s, or the very early 90s. Man, it took me back to sitting in a minibus in the athletics club, going to an athletics meet, and basically looking around the bus at all the beautiful people and going, oh. Then we then went to basically Cowboyville, and we had a great country segment and western segment that finished with the most country of them all, Lemmy, and then towards the end of the show we went on a world tour. We got a little bit of Africa in there, a little bit of Down Under in there, and then we had some great requests. We had some superb requests. There was Megadeth made an appearance, and More Human Than Human by, do any of you know this, Something Zombie. more human than human by zombie.
I imagine Rob Zombie.
Rob Zombie?
I don't think it's Rob Zombie. No, I think it's White Zombie or something like that.
Who knows?
More Human Than Human by White Zombie. I hadn't heard that track before, but that track absolutely rocks. So I mean, it's superb.
So there's a chance for a bit of play here. We can just bombard you with really crap tunes. Everybody tell Warren we want Vengabus. We want the Vengabus.
If I can find it, I will spin it. I'm getting into all this DJ talk, man. It's great. But it's really cool because the platform that we were able to put in place for all of this, Jerry, I have little beats per minute counters and stuff like that there, and then you match this record to that record, and it's got me spinning disky things and everything. It's proper DJ land. And then, oh man, it's so much fun.
It won't be long before you're doing shots through your eye.
On my desk, I even have a bunch of buttons on my desk that I can press. That does all sorts of stuff, like my rim shot, Lloyd.
And Dave Wright in the morning.
We had the spooky segment where we even had the underlying soundtrack during the spooky segment. How mad is that?
You should see if you can find the one that plays so low people foul themselves.
So yeah, it's Cult Radio is a blast. It is an absolute blast, I've got to say. So if you haven't come across, join the Cult of Games, because as well as now having your Sundays blocked out, we have your Wednesday evenings blocked out as well for you to kick back, chillax, and enjoy the sounds of a proper cult. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
You're gonna have to get something to play when you say that, a proper cult.
A proper cult, yeah.
Some sort of drone.
Okay, right. Now I've got all that out of my system. It's time for that most important part of the show. This is the part of the show where the little guy becomes elevated to become the big guy. Jerry picked him. It is, of course, Indie of the Week. I love that bit. Gary, who did we pick?
We've gone to the most important lead belt of all, the lead belt of Bangor in Northern Ireland.
What?
For Aventine Miniatures.
We have a lead belt here. We have someone that
we used to have a lead belt. There used to be three or four companies all operating out of the Bangor area.
That would qualify as a lead belt.
This is the last remaining one. And is also massively popular in the world of historics. Ooh. So Aventine do 28 mil. And when I say 28, large 28. So they scale with Black Tree Designs and Vitrix and that sort of thing.
Where do you want me to start? Do you want me to go to the gallery first?
If you want to go to the gallery, there's the Tony Hart music playing. There.
Yeah.
Go into there. That was one of the main Carthaginian Roman battles. So that'll give you a good idea of some of the people who were there and the outfits you can paint them in.
Yeah.
Don't they have their own big gallery page though, Ben? Didn't you show me that earlier?
That is where we're at.
That's the one we were looking at, yeah.
Oh, I mean this one.
Yeah,
oh,
like I say, they're in the process of migrating across. So
this is their new website.
So this is the new website, yeah. But it's not everything's on it yet. Those other ones are big pictures as well, if you click on them.
Well, that's fine. We can whiz through here.
So, yeah.
You can get a bunch.
Although you're not getting to see Carthaginians now. You're seeing kind of Frank Cavalry from...
Well, we'll go and check out the range.
Sassanids.
As you said, Jerry, Lloyd just finds a room.
Yeah, totally. He goes off. Because you need to guide me, and then immediately starts clicking on everything but. Is his one in life? Busy's. They look like dartboards. People should be playing bullseye with them.
So what are they selling then? What have they got? They've got hill tribes.
It is mostly Spartans. If you go into their shop is probably the easiest way. See on the left, you've got your categories. Go to Aventine. Yep. Click on that one because they also sell rule sets and Little Big Man and that sort of thing. So this is what they sell. They're noticeable for doing the best 28 mil elephants. I know somebody will start going, Warlord Gibbs, Vitrix, miniatures. No. you can jog on with that one. They do African and Indian. They also do armored and unarmored. They do the howdahs and crews and all separately.
Goodness,
this is like a million pages.
Mentioned elephants, Jerry.
Hey, I found an elephant! Yay!
Yeah. You won't focus on one thing. You keep jumping into different windows.
Yeah.
Trying to find you your elephants.
You don't need to find my elephants. Three of them are on that shelf there.
Of course they are. Yeah.
I know where my elephants are.
Of course they are.
But the dead elephants are particularly good as well for reasons. Aww. I don't know why. Now these ones are. I think these are their old metal elephants. So if you look in the pictures, they've started to replace them with resin. And they are absolutely gorgeous sculpts. And they are, I think, also the cheapest 28 mil. So all this plastics are cheaper than resin and metal. Again, jog on. So these are better. They're bigger. They're better detailed and cheaper as well. So you can go nuts with them.
Oh, look at that.
I like that one.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, these crews are amazing.
The crews are great, and depending on what faction or what nation you're playing and what period and whether they would have had howdahs or just been mounted on the top, you can buy the howdahs separately. You can buy crews for the howdahs, or you can just have the sort of crews hopped on the back in a stride.
There's a category for howdahs there, just down from there, Lloyd.
They will just be two types, either wooden or hide-covered. Mm-hmm. So you are just essentially a box that you put your people in. Yeah, so they go nuts with that. But the ranges of miniatures themselves are absolutely superb. So, for example, for somebody getting into Clash of Spears, if you were to look at their Carthaginians, you'll find that you've got various types of Punic infantry and commands and stuff to add a bit more variety to the plastics that you're currently working on, or to put in, you know, some of your hero figures, that sort of thing.
Right. Who were the Carthaginians? Just to remind us again,
because they were Phoenician colony, so sort of Middle East or eastern part of the Mediterranean. Who then settled in North Africa, and the colony ended up being bigger than the country they came from. Eventually,
right.
They took over big chunks of Africa, big chunks of Spain, and then they went rampaging through Rome for a while
If you're watching the likes of Gladiator, when they're talking about the Battle of Carthage and stuff, it's these dudes, isn't it, they were fighting?
Yeah. Although, less chariots, I imagine.
A lot less chariots.
A lot less chariots.
It's kind of Hannibal and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If you know about Hannibal and the Alps and that kind of thing.
His dad.
Speaking of Romans, let's see what we've got for Romans.
Romans are, well, they're split. So you've got your Republican / Caesarian Romans, then you've also got your early Imperial, so the ones from Gladiator that people are sort of more familiar with the rectangular scutum shields and
yeah. So the early Romans are called the Imperial Romans.
No, the later
Romans are called the Imperial.
Yeah.
So the early Romans, that's your Marcus Aurelius or whatever.
He'd be early Imperial.
He's early. Hang on a second here. You just told me that it was late Imperial. Is it early Imperial?
It's early Imperial Rome or later.
Oh, right. Okay.
You have to remember, Rome is 1200. Actually, it's probably, if you bring in the busies as well, Rome is close to 2,000 years.
Yes.
And it goes kingdom, republic, and then empire. And
so
then the kingdom, empire fractures.
Uh-huh.
Kingdom, Republic, Empire. So early Imperial is the last period of Rome.
Where am I?
I have no idea. You're just clicking on everything.
You're in the Republican Rome.
So, yeah.
Gladiator was set in early Imperial. Imperial.
Right. So okay. Essentially, Jesus Christ onwards.
Right.
I was thinking that myself. Jesus Christ, where do I start?
That's the one.
So
Jesus.
The Republic then was before Jesus.
Well, the kingdoms first, and then 800 BC or so, and then into 27 BC. That's your period for kingdom into republic. So, so 1,000 years thereabouts, and then 1,000 years afterwards thereabouts is your imperial Rome.
All right, chaps, hold on. I've been opening up some pages here in the meantime. Trying to get a grip on this because the range is like huge. And there's two websites or something now as well. They're opening a new store. Is that what the case is here, Jerry?
They're migrating across to a new web store, yeah.
Okay, so let's see. what I've got here. So this is the new store then, I believe.
Yes.
Yes.
So I've opened up a few pages on here.
Someone is at the office, guys.
Right, here's the successors you were talking about, Jay.
If anybody likes to go post Alexander when everything went a bit rumbled fruity.
But that's mid early late imperial though, isn't it?
Could be
with a dash of moderns.
It's certainly very very late Alexander's empire anyway.
Oh, okay, right.
Well, let's go even later Rome then. Let's go to the busy and just fry your head even more warm.
Right, that's early biblical late modern imperial. Yeah, so. I know these guys. These guys are descended from the Vikings, though, are they not?
Yes, after Moses.
Yes.
As historically accurate. Yes. That's exactly right.
They're beautiful models, though.
So yeah, they are very nice models. Excellent. I think as Jerry was saying earlier, I think one of the key things about this is that you could use this as a really nice additional thing to the plastic kits that are out there. You see, you just add a little bit more of like a bit more character into the mix as well for a lot of stuff. So use these kind of things for like your command elements.
Oh, look at
then
that.
Use the plastics for the rest of your troops as well.
Command elephants.
That's a good command there. Look at that.
And they're metal. These will have substance. Love that.
My elephants. Love that. I'll give you that.
Are your elephants metal, Jerry?
Yeah. Got in before they went to that terrible resin thing.
Oh dear.
Back when I can still kill somebody with them. Put one in the sock. But they're
that's a cool set. I like that one. That's
They've got really nice ranges of you know specific things that you wouldn't ordinarily see. I mean, you're not going to find a huge amount of Italian hill tribes in plastic.
Well, this Byzantine range is really fleshed out.
It's huge.
Most of them are, but because you've jumped to the new site where they haven't migrated everything across yet, you're only seeing whatever they've brought across. So, I mean, you were looking at the Roman on the old site earlier, where you've got literally pages of Hastati, pages of Principe, Felides, you know, every facet of a manipular Roman army is there. Yeah.
So basically, if you wanted to make an entire Roman army out of the stuff from Aventine,
you're
not going to be lacking for that kind of thing.
No.
Oh, hello.
Look at them. How posh are they?
Love that.
But I also...
Standards.
Look, there's the holy hand grenade of Antioch on top of that one.
That's exactly what that looks like. Very nice.
They got the little icons here.
I also opened up the hill tribes, just the ones that you just mentioned there, Jerry.
Yeah.
So I've got them open as well. Check these bad boys out.
So when Rome were having difficulties, some of the reasons why Rome changed from the Hastati... Triarii, the three lines of manipular formations into the sentries, the you know 80 men in a unit with rectangular shields and blah 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 blah. Essentially, they ran into these guys.
That's cool.
They discovered that they get killed up when running about in the mountain regions, that they just couldn't fight the way they were fighting, and they needed to, instead of just being phalanx formations that were very static, then they had to actually re-equip their men. Hmm. It's one of the reasons why Rome kept going, because they would go, well, this doesn't work.
And what time between Moses and Jesus was this?
This is the interesting thing. I was actually watching a documentary about Rome last night.
Oh.
And one of the standout little points, I fall asleep through it, so I haven't watched it all. I will
that good.
I use documentaries as a kind of like a sleeping pill. You know, I stick it on and then I drift over with the comfort of Bettany Hughes or somebody like that, dude, just wittering in my ear. But in this one, the dude said, right, they were talking about the formation of Rome. So they were talking about Remus and Romulus, okay? And basically, it was Romulus ultimately that won in the Battle of the Two Brothers, okay? And this is why they have statues of Remus and Romulus sucking on a wolf head, right?
Yeah, but you're talking about the Romans. I'll flash off more of the Romans.
He says all of the formation of Rome, the establishing of Rome, is steeped in mythology, he says, but I happen to have the first text written by a historian, a Roman historian, So this is the first text, Roman historian talking about the formation of Rome. Mm-hmm. And he says, and before I read it to you, let me tell you, Rome existed for 700 years by this stage that this was written.
Yeah.
So even that first text from the first kind of historian writing about Rome was still 700 years after that city state or whatever village, farm, town, yep, whatever it started out as, became. It's this is time. It's just I'm struggling to get my head around this kind of thing. You can see just why and how these states became so powerful. It's really
one of the interesting things when you look at ancient history as a whole is that when you look at the Roman Empire and Rome as it was. I think I've talked about this before, but they used to go on holiday to Egypt because to them, Egypt was a historical holiday to go to see. Egypt had been around for thousands of years before that as well. So it's one of these things where the Roman time period spans such a massive length of time, but that's nothing compared to the grand scheme of everything.
Yeah.
Including the Greek states and how they were formed and then Rome after that and all that kind of thing as well and what was taken from what and that kind of stuff. So it's a really fascinating little melting pot of sort of information to dive into.
Well, I have one more product that I want to show off in Aventine Miniatures. Mm. Probably the most significant and the most important product that they have made. This is the product that is going to save the relationship of the brothers of Warren and Lloyd.
No, you're not getting mine.
Because we have found our source of spears, baby! So myself and Lloyd,
and all their spiky glory.
Yep, we have been having a little bit of a ding dong with one another because we have spiky metal spears like this somewhere, but neither of us can.
Maybe Jerry's got them all.
Do you think Jerry has them all?
I certainly have some. Yeah.
I wanted them for my Ewoks. So I have this Ewok Star Wars Legion army, and unfortunately, all my Ewoks are currently disarmed. So they're a cuddly army instead of a fierce, spiky, stabby army. So the reason I want metal spears is because I drop models, and I need spears that will actually resist. And it means if I'm playing Justin and he gets all cheesy, I can stab him in the eyes with it. You know?
Definitely,
so,
it's definitely a way to go.
Weirdly, automatic win for me.
Weirdly, that's how I discovered Aventine many moons ago. I dug out an old Roman army that I'd had sitting about forever and a day, and I'd lost all of the pilum.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't find where I'd actually had put those bags, ripped the place apart several times looking for them, eventually gave it up and started Googling who I could get them off. Because I went back to the company I bought them from, and they don't sell them individually. And they went, we'll do you a deal, we'll sell you like 24 at the same price as buying just 24 of the men.
Yes.
Again, going, why would I pay that for a spear when I could buy the man and the spear for the same price? You know what, I'll look elsewhere, thank you very much for your time, bye. And then discovered the Aventine sell cast peeler. And I was like, all right, smashing, what else do you sell? Click, 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 click. I'll have some cataphract cavalry and elephants, please.
As you do.
Roman mana ballista. I've never seen another company make a mana ballista. Essentially a crossbow, a handheld crossbow, but it's a ballista, you know, like one of their bolt throwers.
Oh, wow, cool.
So Romans had them. Nobody knows how much they used them. I'm going, oh, it'll be good. A couple of them in the back of the hide on my elephant.
Yep.
Are you going to get the transfers and stuff for that elephant as well? Because it was just on the site there and was milling in my mind. It was kicking around and going, ooh, I wonder if you get transfers for this. I went back over. And hey, presto, of course you do.
I haven't decided.
There's a whole section here that says little big man transfer.
Yeah. Ooh. I haven't been in because the heffy lumps are specifically being used for a fantasy army. So the rest of the army is Roman, and then the heffy lumps aren't Roman. Hence, as you can see there, very not Roman looking things. So there's nothing that really matches what I'm kind of going for colors wise.
They are
very nice, mind you, but you know.
Because it was just
and they're sized specifically for sized Aventine miniatures, right? I'm sold.
Because sometimes
sold.
Sometimes you can find a range and it's really sweet, but then you find yourself going, "Oh crap! There's no transfers for this. I'm going to have to start painting or smudging or fudging stuff."
Well, in my case, where is the little bugger? Excuse me.
Has he got his pants on today, has he?
Oh, I've got cut jeans and everything. Hang on a second before I show that one off. This belongs in a museum. Oh, cobwebs. There's a little Roman fellow on top of that as well.
But I
was going, what way will I do this? You're probably not going to be able to see this particularly well. I'm going, oh, I can't be arsed hand painting it. And I've got some paint pens, silver and gold, and going,
oh, cool.
Well, what if I start drawing stuff on a paint pen and discovered, no, you can't. No, it's garbage. That one, though, that's a Sharpie one, which is finer than the actual expensive paint pens that really don't.
It's a metallic Sharpie, is it?
Yeah, metallic Sharpie. I got these Pilot silver and gold paint pens as well, and thinking they are actually paint, but unfortunately they blob so much. So currently, I get about half of it painted, and then I go, you know what, I should test doing some color schemes on this, not on the two that are just undercoated. No, get all the skin stuff done, and then the metallics done, and then decide to screw up the blanket. So
yeah,
who knows how that will go?
Do they do transfers to fit the entire blanket by any chance? Do they?
Yeah, they just, I just haven't decided how I'm going to paint them, because everything else is fairly Roman, but the elephants aren't, so I'd need to Romanize them.
Mm-hmm. Well, groovy. Right.
Who knows?
Okay, guys.
Let's face it, it'll never get done.
Aventine Miniatures, your source for prickly spears and amazing ancient armies, like gorgeous stuff. So go check it out. AventineMiniatures.co.uk. for the main site, and www.aventineminiatures.org for the new site that they're currently migrating to. Right. Awesome Indie of the Week. Thank you for that one, Jerry. I think it's time for some news.
Coming to you from the center of Northwestern Europe, covering board games, war games, card games, and all that you love. It's the news.
So yeah, the first bit of news that we're going to be diving into comes from the guys at Games Workshop. Once again, they've sort of fired up their news cycle, and everything is sort of getting stuck back in with all the sort of Warhammer 40,000 Grimdark stuff and all that kind of thing. The Psychic Awakening is continuing to power forward at pace, and the next book is available for pre-order this weekend. So War of the Spider, which will introduce the new Fabius, because that's how you say his name, apparently, Fabius Bile, will introduce Fabius Bile into the mix as a new model, as well as rules for using him within said Chaos Space Marine forces, with a little bit of a twist as well. Because one of the things they've done with this particular book is it will have an entire section dedicated to the creations of Bile, which is a new way for you to play your Chaos Space Marines on the tabletop. Hopefully playing around with the idea of sort of mutants and sort of like weird transformative Chaos Space Marines that have been infected with these different sort of serums and that kind of thing. As well,
I like
as that
corset. His corset is magnificent.
You know, the Grim Dark Future, you've got to get a trim figure, use a space corset.
He does
corset.
Look well.
Yeah. Wasn't he
He's
previewed?
Wearing Space Marine boots
yeah.
and a corset. Yeah. That's it. It's a great look. I see where the spider thing comes from now. Isn't he? Yeah. That's a great model. That is a good model. I like that.
Yeah. Mm. So this book also comes with rules for the Death Guard, the Adeptus Custodes, the Sisters of Silence, and also Imperial Assassins. So if any of those factions, all those sort of sub-factions within the different armies of 140,000 appeal to you, then there's some options to dive in and play around with that there. I think they revealed in the original sort of like preview for him, he's the sort of last of the iconic central figures within the Chaos Space Marine Force to be revamped and given a new look as well. So pretty cool new model to go along with the sort of continuing story in Warhammer 40,000. There is also some news as we sort of quickly looked at there, the expansion for Blackstone Fortress. So the final expansion for that game is also now coming out this weekend as well. So this is one where you get to include the Zoet in your games. And there's also going to be rules within there for using him in games of 40K as well. So if you want to use the Zoet in your games as a proper piece of your army, then you can do that too, which is very cool.
I still think he's the cutest little thing. He's so cute.
I like his wee belly. I really do like his
wee belly. He's got the gut plate like an ogre from Warhammer. That's great, yeah.
It's Yeah, I can imagine wearing one of them.
You can do a Zote cosplay. There you go.
Next up.
Who's going to be the back end?
Justin, obviously. Justin.
Harsh but true.
Fragging Unicorns and Deathrace Designs have a terrain preview out.
Yeah, so Fragging Unicorns are a company that we've been following over the last couple of months who are bringing a game called Gangs of the Undercity to Kickstarter next month. And it's sort of a game that sort of meshes together cyberpunk, science fiction, and fantasy races into one world. And they've teamed up with Deathrace Designs to create this range of terrain, which is going to be available as part of the Kickstarter and the range going forward as well. Nice. So Deathrace Designs are going to do all of the terrain, as you can see here, so the larger, bigger buildings.
Minus the mat, because that seems...
They're also going to be doing some of the smaller elements as well. So things like the cyberlinks, which are sort of nodules and stuff that you can hack into when you're playing your games of Gangs of the Unicorn. Gangs of the Unicorn? Yeah. Gangs of the Undercity. That would be a cool game, though, Unicorn Gangs. But yeah. the sort of interactive elements of Gangs of the Undercity are going to be included within this terrain range as well, which I think is very, very cool indeed. Hopefully we're going to see a lot more buildings coming forward as well as the sort of campaign progresses and gets into the speed of things during July. The thing I'm really looking forward to, and the thing I like about these buildings in particular, is that they've done that thing that I think all cyberpunk games should do, and they've taken the look of what the world was like before all these scientific sort of additions, and then sort of bolted them on and sort of merged them in with the design. So you've got that slightly classical sort of neo-Babylon style look to the buildings, with then all the sort of gubbins and extra bits sort of bolted onto the side of it as well, which I think is really cool. So it sort of gives you an idea of what the world was like before all of these kind of scientific endeavors were sort of put to the fore and stuff. So yeah, some really nice looking terrain. And as I say, the Kickstarter is coming up in July, so watch out for that one. We've got some Let's Plays and other stuff about the game coming up as well, so keep that in mind. As we sort of go in and delve into it.
That is a really lovely looking terrain set. I would love to take that terrain set and really kind of dank and dirty it up.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
You have that kind of
full Blade Runner.
Yes, yeah. but more deserty, Jerry. You know, as if you're going through
that. That one certainly has a very
Arabian
feel to it with all the archways and stuff, which is nice as well, because generally if you see any sort of cyberpunky type thing, they tend to go west meets Japan. You get that an awful lot, whereas this time they're going, you know what, no.
Do you know what this is? This is basically, I would do it almost like a ruined Dubai.
I'd take that
feel of Dubai in the future, where they have all the science and the gubbins and stuff on, but it's also kind of apocalyptic as well, in that the desert has started to kind of reclaim parts of it.
Yeah.
There's crack to be had there.
One of the things they talked about in their blog post for this as well was that this is the kind of level of terrain that you'll need for playing your typical games as well.
Yeah.
So there's not going to be too much actually that you're going to need. You're going to need a couple of big buildings, bit of scattered terrain, and that's about it, really.
Yeah, it's played on a 3x3.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at here is essentially the entire table, then?
Yeah, that's your basic table setup for a game of Gangs of the Undersea, which is cool. So,
nice.
You want it dense, because if you leave big, wide open spaces, like that walkway down the middle, then some elf git with a sniper rifle would just shoot my lovely orc in the head. Not that I'm better, but I am a little bit better.
Yeah, just throw some cars and stuff into the mix as well. That'd be cool.
What I need is a bus to go with the bus shelter bit. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just some vehicles rocking down me in.
So next up, we've got some stuff from Raging Heroes. So a lot of people will know that they're doing their Patreon.
Yes.
Which allows you to pick up STL files for a bunch of the stuff they've kind of been working away on in the background and designing up for a range of different things. It could be fantasy, it could be sci-fi, it could be whatever. They're sort of going through all different sort of avenues of thought. The first set of releases that they came out when the Patreon launched were the Pirates of the White Sea, and those are now available as physical miniatures. So you don't have to get the files, you can buy the actual miniatures from Raging Heroes over on their web store right now. So they've been broken down into, there's a set called the Legends of the White Sea, and there's one for the Freebooters of the White Sea, and then every single one of those miniatures can also be bought individually as well if you particularly like one character, for example, within that set. Two of them, I believe, are actually lumped in with the larger one as well. But
love this one with the cannon.
Yes, they are very, very cool characters. Yeah. A lot of people have had a lot of fun with these, putting them together, printing them off at home, and they have turned out really, really nicely. So I'm sure that the professional sort of printers at Raging Heroes as well are also going to produce some fascinating models for you to use in your fantasy and role-playing sort of war games and role-playing games and stuff. So yeah.
These sets are beautiful. These sets
are really nice. Yeah.
I was very lucky in that I got a little sample model. Do you remember the little in the current June lineup? Yes. Do you remember the little goblin?
Goblin selling all the knives.
Yeah. Guess who got a sample of that to print?
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to be talking. Do you know what? I'm going to talk about more about that in next week's show. Because I was doing a little test of taking a version of it that didn't have the pre-supports in and a version of it that did have the pre-supports in, applying all supports to one and then just printing the other. So I will report back on that because I'm not finished yet. I also want to play about with the scale and see what options and things there are. So, good stuff ahead on that. I'm enjoying that.
Yeah. Very awesome, next, we're moving on to a little bit of historical stuff. So a company that has been around for a while, but I only really found this week, is 1898 Miniatures, or Miniaturas, as I should say, because they create a range of Spanish tercios for use in the 30 Years' War, as well as Cuba and the Philippines Wars as well. These are a bunch of badass looking pikemen that come in a whole range of different stances and styles. They have both armored and unarmored versions of each of the pikemen. They also have some set up ready for receiving a charge as well, with their sort of pike slightly higher, which is really, really cool. And they do that thing that I really liked about the Empire in Warhammer Fantasy, which obviously was taken from history, which is where you have the pikemen in the center, and then you have detachments on either side with the muskets firing at the enemies as they come towards you, and they're held back and stuff. It's very cool. It's really nice to see that kind of like combined arm style thing done here.
Miniatures, look at the faces on them.
They are really fascinating, these. Yeah, they're really good. They're all available in metal, I believe, as well. Which is
they are. Awesome. They're all sweet metal. Yeah. The Miniaturas 1898 website is very good because they have an awful lot of the historical background behind the ranges they sculpt. So where they came from, what they're up to, that sort of thing. You can, if you are in the UK, you can pick them up from Empress Miniatures.
Yes, Empress.
They are the distributors in the UK, or you can get them direct from them if you're in Spain or if that's easier. Mm-hmm. It's very handy. I'd like to think that they're pre-Brexiting us. You know, that way I wouldn't have to pay extra for getting them from the EU. So God bless them. But they do some beautiful, beautiful miniatures.
Beautiful. Yeah, really fascinating. And as I say, that's just the sort of like the spear tip, some might say, of their range. They have a whole bunch of other stuff in there as well, which is well worth checking out in more detail.
And it all has that Spanish twist to it, or not twist to it, but Spanish basis, because it was very much, you know, let's talk about, everybody talks about Sweden and everybody talks about, you know, the English Civil War, but the Spanish tercios were probably the best example of that form of pike and shot in that period.
Right, next up, back to terrain.
So
we've got the final lineup of the Cromlech Frostgrave stuff.
So we had a look at these guys last week, and we had a look at Cromlech and what Tabletop Scenic, so that's sort of like terrain arm of the business, is working on at the moment. And the terrain collection, so all 15 of the new models are now available over on their web store. So if you want to go and check out some of their HDF terrain, which comes non-painted, but it's, you know, easy to put together and build and paint as well, that you can go and do that right now. They've got a whole range of different buildings in the mix. Some of them are just sort of for standard scattered terrain and runes for playing your traditional games on. But then they've also got some buildings which are specifically designed for scenarios in the book, and they'll have a little stamp on them to tell you that it's for this scenario. So say, for example, you want to go and play that particular game, you can go and pick up that terrain set and build everything for that, which is, I think is pretty cool. They're all multi-layer. They have loads of detail mixed into them and everything like that. Perfectly suited, obviously, to Frostgrave, the official range, out now, all 15 models for you to go and check out. So yeah, if you want to know more about it, by the way, as well, and you want to know more about Cromlech, then you can go and check out last week's Weekender, where we actually talked about them in a little bit more detail and looked at their range, including orcs and a whole bunch of World War II Polish stuff as well. So go and give that a look as well.
Yeah. This is beautiful stuff. And you know what? I really like that. This is the set for that scenario.
Yes.
I really like that. That is kind of cool because in the Rangers of Shadowdeep, it's kind of scenario-based. And I like that ability to be able to just go, yes,
pick what that up. What do I need? I need this.
Yeah.
Also,
build it up.
Yeah, with the second edition of Frostgrave coming in August, I think.
Yes.
It means if people are interested in getting into it or reigniting, if they played first and then have sort of dropped off, you could potentially have this stuff, get it painted and have it sitting ready. So you're prepped and ready to go when second edition launches.
Frostgrave is, because of this terrain, that second edition has now jumped up to the top of my list. I want to have a look at this, and I'm going to do it at 28 mil, I think.
Shock horror. Stepped away from the 15, good.
What do you mean good?
Because there's so many wonderful 28 mil miniatures for the Frostgrave range that you can already go out and buy. So.
Like Big Davy.
Big Davy, yeah, of course.
Big Davy, right.
I was also just going to say as well, for that terrain set, the stuff that's slightly like the scat terrain, that's actually made out of resin. So there's some other bits and pieces in there that are made out of resin for the slightly more high detail, sort of like scatter terrain and ruins, that kind of thing.
Or things like things they couldn't do in wood, like the bell.
Like this set here, for example. That resin.
Yeah, so they're going to be resin sets and stuff. So yeah, it's cool.
I like the churchyard, the cemetery.
Yeah,
we've got a great game and little demonstration board in the store based on a set like that from GW. Mm. So it's nice to have another alternative because it was a cracking little board.
Mm-hmm.
I still right. buy the stuff, yeah.
If our Rome look at the start of the show didn't going, we're going back in.
We are going back to Rome. Yeah.
This time we're going for middle, early, late Imperial Republic. And yeah, Gangs of Rome.
Yeah, so Gangs of Rome, which is the sort of skirmish game by Footsore Miniatures and Games, has released four new sets. They were sort of released under the title of Rome's Most Wanted. But they give you a bunch of the meanest and brutal members of the city's underworld for you to play as. So it breaks down into four different sets, as you can see here. You've got the Lions of Bacchus, the Reapers of Minerva, the Veterans of the Aventine, and then finally the Daughters of Sappho. Each of those sets will come with the three miniatures that are included within each of them. You'll also get the little tiny terrain piece with each of them as well. So you notice there's like a relief of Bacchus in the one there. You'll get that sort of loot chest behind those guys as well, which is really cool. You'll also get all the tokens and the sort of individual cards for the characters as well for you to use in the game. So it's a nice little kind of like additional booster for you to throw into your games of Gangs of Rome and maybe add a few more cutthroat elements to your criminal posse, as it were, as they go about controlling all the different districts of Rome, nothing which we still need to have built, them. By the way.
No, we do need to have built, yeah.
These guys all have cups to drink from what? Is that a fountain or what's that?
That's like, yeah. That was like a relief of Bacchus that goes on the wall, so it might be, yeah.
I imagine it'd be pouring wine.
It could be pouring wine.
He is, after all, Bacchus. Yeah. they're very big fans of that. There's also, I don't think it's mentioned in this article, but they have said that they're about to release a campaign book
for cool.
Gangs of Rome as well to push that on. So currently they've got a few free downloads for things like night fighting rules and the like, because Gangs of Rome is, it's like that Sherlock Holmes film by Mrs. Madonna, whatever his name is, Guy Ritchie,
yeah.
So technically, yes, it is set in Rome, but if you think it's Rome with, you know, Dropkick Murphy soundtrack and some madness going on where you can have people, you know, paragliding off rooftops and stabbing people up or throwing pepper sand in people's faces, you know, it's not a staunchly historic skirmish game.
It's history adjacent
is a great term for it, yeah. So you can build up your gang and go nuts with it.
If you wanted a flavor of it, though, you could go and watch that TV show Rome, because it It's about
kind of like all the backstabbing and stuff going on in the background. That's basically what this is.
Yeah. I've never seen it.
Oh, you've never seen
Rome's great.
Is that the one on HBO?
Yeah. It was back in the day. Yeah.
Is it good? Really?
Yeah.
It is
you should really try and good. Find it on Netflix or something because it's awesome. It's really good.
Really awesome.
Yeah.
It's honestly one of the best. One of the best dramas, kind of like historical dramas that's ever been done. Yeah.
Me and the missus, we tore through that.
Is it better than Vikings?
Better than Vikings, yeah.
Yeah, I do think it's better than Vikings. Other people,
it's like on a lot of people say it's on par in terms of the quality with like Band of Brothers and stuff like that. So,
you might be hyping it a little bit there.
I just reel it back, reel it back, reel it back.
Okay, guys. Well, thank you very much for watching. We're all away.
We're off to watch Rome, but since you've already seen it, you can start building Rome then.
Yeah, it's really good. Well, I'm going to go watch Rome. I'm not going to build no Rome. Get the hell out of here with that building Rome thing. Do you see any Rome stuff back here?
It's all sitting here waiting for you.
Oh, well, it's too bad then. You'll have to build it.
I have to build it. I've avoided building it for years now.
Is it family friendly Rome?
No.
No.
All right. No. No. So it's
very, very much not. No. Not much of
the kids thing then, yeah?
No.
Right, okay.
That's not as gory as Spartacus and as like lewd as Spartacus, but it's still pretty lewd and gory. So, yeah.
Who do you call him from Robson and Jerome?
Robson.
Is it good? Or Jerome.
Or Jerome.
Is it as horny as Game of Thrones?
No, but there is some horny bits in it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really revolve around the whole horny bits.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any bad language in it or is it all?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So so they've got French in it as well as Latin.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Right. I'm in the mood for some fantasy. This next new story is going to blow people's minds. This has got to be the story of the year so far. Forget about COVID. Forget about protests. Forget about Trump. Forget about everything else. This is the biggest story of the year.
Okay, so you've kind of hyped it up a little bit there. But so this is the...
It's right up there with Rome, Ben. It's right up there.
Yep. Yeah. I'm just reporting what the people say, okay? Right, so anyway, this is an extension to the halfling armies that TT Combat do. Now, we've been sort of getting a flavor of halflings from Jerry over the last couple of weeks and sort of building up his army for using Kings of War and stuff. These are the halfling shield maidens, which are looking pretty badass. They're going to be available...
Stay tuned, guys. We're almost there, but we're not there yet.
They're going to be available over on their web store. You get the ability to pick up either sort of like the standard sort of hand weapon shield style shield maidens. You can also get yourself a command element as well, which you can see at the front of the unit there too. But possibly the best of these three releases, because there's another two, is the Walrus Riders.
Money shot! There's the money shot right there!
So you've seen halflings riding goats. You've seen halflings riding rabbits. You've seen halflings riding ponies. Have you seen halflings riding walruses? Now you have.
I have never seen anything ride a walrus. I really haven't. This is incredible. Yeah. I have, since seeing this, I don't know, maybe this makes me weird or something, but I've been trying to imagine what it would be like to ride a walrus.
I'm bumpy.
Imagine it operates like a fantasy jet ski. They're fine in the water, but once they hit land, they're going to come to a shocking stop.
Oh, halflings on walrus. Who, you know, in this year of 2020, where everything is blindsiding us, okay? this takes it for me. I would, if you had said to me at the end of last year, 2020 will be the year of the halfling riding on a walrus. I went, nah.
If you had said,
who would ever think of that?
If he had said to you, we're all going to be locked in our houses for months, you'd be like, maybe, but a walrus.
I love that. I absolutely do. I think every fantasy army should now have their own contingent of halfling ladies on a walrus. It's just
pretty special.
What have you ever seen walrus fighting?
They are brutal.
Oh, yeah, they really are, yeah. Yeah.
They're absolutely brutal. You know, look here. I'm not joking. That is a formidable, formidable thing. Imagine the stench. Imagine the smell of fish whenever they come at you. It would be incredible. It would be overpowering.
But what are they?
The morale, you know.
Is it a unit of walrus husses or walrus, walrus eye?
Walrus eye, I think.
Is it a murder of walrus?
Probably call it a shield walrus.
That's good.
Right. Yes. So I'm going to quickly move on to the third element of the releases that they did for the halfling army.
Oh, it's a herd. It's a herd of walrus. A herd of
walruses. But anyway, so the third set.
Or a pod.
It's okay, Ben. We'll get the words out.
Or a huddle, apparently, too.
The worst part is here, while he's looking up what a flanger walrus is called, is he's the one who's in control of showing everybody at home the pictures, so we have to wait on him.
A flange of walrus.
The third set of releases aren't quite as impressive, but they're still quite impressive to me because I love bears, and it's a set of war bears for use in your army as well.
Hello.
So these are a set of heavily armored bears for you to put as part of your army, charging forward to break the enemy ranks and destroy them. I kind of like the fact that they've sort of blinged these bears out a bit and like stuck gems all over them. It clearly means they really, really care about their bears. So
They're care bears.
That's your
only thing
your
that they're missing is Romans.
Yes.
Yep.
So you know, we should get the legendary Romans riding on bears again, man. You know, it's
that's a meme that will never die.
We could get Romans riding on walruses.
Dude, if we get them walrus, right? I reckon we could have a lot of stuff riding on them. I'm thinking Necrons.
Should say Primaris. They're on
riding
everything.
Into battle on walrus. I think the 40K tournament scene would appreciate such a thing.
Right.
And what we do is we basically they count as you have Primaris on motorbikes. Forget the motorbikes. Put Primaris on walrus. Counts as Primaris on bikes. There's some hefty, dangerous walrus.
Very true.
I like it.
Snake bite orcs just replace all their boars with walrus eye.
Right. We have an interview. Jerry, you got a chance to sit down and chat with the guys from Signum Games.
I did indeed. Hello, folks. Today I'm joined by Yevheni from the Legends of Signum. And we're going to be talking about the new Kickstarter that's coming up to add some new factions in. So it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. Likewise, and a big pleasure. Thank you for having me here today. And I'm here from home in Ukraine.
So, I think all of us have been squirreled away into our relative homes for a little while now. So first off, for people who haven't seen the Legends of Signum before, can you tell us a bit about the type of game it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Legends of Signum is a skirmish war game. It is not a common war game, like with plenty of characters on the battlefield. It's like a war game where some squads fight against each other on the battlefield. So mm-hmm. in our game, there are around 5-6 characters for each side on the battlefield. And you use a special battle deck to summon them to the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And also you use spells, you use some different tactic cards, use some terrains to impede the creature's movement, etc. And also you construct your city in your building zone, your area, to summon the creature, the creatures actually, and also, of course, to play these spells. So at the start of the game, you choose your hero and choose your faction, situated on your battlefield side, and draw your cards from battle deck that consists of characters and spells, and then depending on how much buildings do you have and what are they specifically mm-hmm. are, you summon characters to fight against your opponent, and also play spells, for example, to deal some damage, to heal the characters, etc. And the objective is to eliminate the opponent's hero, or to construct all buildings in your city zone. And I want with it to collect 33 prosperity points. It is a little bit different from our very first winning objective, because previously it was like collecting only 51 prosperity points.
But now
we changed it to a little bit more different objective.
Sure.
So
it's a fascinating thing, because it's such a unique blend of miniature board game and collectible card game, where you've got an awful lot of tactics that you can build in simply from how you actually put things like your battle deck together and the characters, the minions that go in with your hero, because the you don't start with two full forces on the battlefield at the at the start of the game. You just start with hero against hero and sort of build from there.
Yeah, and what is interesting is that besides that you got your like high quality miniatures, high quality resin miniatures and fantasy setting. You also have this duo game when you can like play with your friends. With for example, like paint your models and go against your opponent in a battle. And besides the things we offer in starter set, you can like construct your army depending on the strength of characters, or probably depending on their appearance. If you, some people like their style, and bring their squad, put them into their deck, and find their hero and make them lead the army to the victory.
So it's a fascinating, it's a very quick play game as well. You've got you're playing on like a 60 centimeter mat in the middle of your table, and you can get a game within half an hour to sort of an hour and a half, depending on how brutal you either take down your opponent or your opponent takes you down. So you can get quite a lot of games in an afternoon, which is always good. So the Kickstarter is actually adding two new factions, two Legends of Signum then. Do you want to take us through the plans then for your Kickstarter and for the new factions?
Yeah, sure. It is our third Kickstarter campaign, by the way. The first one was in 2018 with our very first Legends of Signum set, Battle for Valor, where we presented first two new factions, Empire and the Free City. And the second campaign was like a standalone game, Dragon Hunters. This can be like some of the stuff can be used in Legends of Signum.
Okay.
This is our third campaign. So the Cursed Forest presents you two new factions. Akari Spider Elves and Alliance of Unicorn. So this is a battle between spider-like creatures, the previously forest elves that were cursed by some disease in their forest, and they became like very poisonous creatures. And the Alliance is like forest elves teamed up with wolfens.
Yeah.
And they
sort of an alliance of convenience.
Yeah, yeah. And their objective, like, they're pretty very different between each other in their alliance, but they decided to save the world because, you know, the Akari and their touch, they poisonous touch can, you know, destruct the nature itself and break calamity. So this is this unity is like called to actually save everything in the nature and fight against the cursed people.
Yeah.
Spider elves. Yeah.
I have to say, the miniatures blew me away, but then I'm used to being blown away by the miniatures you guys produce. That's why I have quite a few of them. But the Akari themselves, because the elves and the wolfen are really nice elves. They're really nice wolfen. You knew what to expect. But the Akari, the multi-limbed madness that's going on with them is particularly good. Things like that.
Yeah.
Wolfen, who's just some sort of monstrous blend of insect and wolfen, is just stunning. And then the Queen of Sorrow, I have no idea how you pronounce that.
Gwaedrugan.
Gwaedrugan.
Yeah.
She is stunning. I was blown away by her. I'm going to see whether or not I can get a painting tutorial done. It will probably be after the Kickstarter has gone, unfortunately. But I really want to see her painted up because that model is just amazing.
That's great. And, you know, it's like every our faction has its their own style and appearance. So,
yeah.
So, Akari have like, you know, pretty uncommon and some dark style. And whether they have their dark and dark thematic, they also, like, in their game mechanics, they work, like, in this form. And they have their queens, like, you know, like bees, like some insects, or they're it's like infested elves that work like the one mechanism in the swarm, something like that.
Yeah, they're all about sort of poisoning and overwhelming their opponent.
Yeah.
The other thing that this Kickstarter is bringing is a new gameplay mode. So up until now, for Legends of Signum, it's been a player versus player. Essentially just a war game or a board game, the sort of standard offensive style of game where you're attempting to beat your opponent. But now you've got a quest mode that also allows you to play player versus environment in like a solo version. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. So the PvE mode and also PvP mode, the quest mode, actually, it is designed like special mode for people who can like challenge themselves against the game. In this mode, you bring your army already constructed. For example, you played against your opponent a few minutes ago, and you can like challenge the game. So in this game, you play against the overworld, which is the game itself, and challenge him into the battle in who will be the first to collect the necessary amount of victory points. At this point, you draw your quest cards every turn until you have two on your side. And if you...
The quest cards?
Yes. They have necessary completing objectives. And once you complete the quest, you like get in reward, your reward, and put it into your pool of accomplished quests.
Yeah. So, but for example.
But if you failed, you can get some penalties, and overworld increases his army too. So it's like the game becomes enraged if you not successful in the game. So. And this is like two sides of coin, because if you successful, it also can become more powerful. So you can just be very attentive to the way you're playing, play very wisely, and like don't move like randomly on the battlefield, and just put your efforts very strictly to your game plan.
Yeah, so you can't just hope to wait the overlord out. He'll ramp up against you, and at the same time, if you are doing well, then also he'll ramp up against you. So there's a bit of pushback when you're playing, which is good. And you can still take this quest mode and still play a PvP version of it as well.
Yeah, and PvP is very similar to PvE, but it can be a little bit more difficult, because when in the PvE mode, all the creatures of your enemy are controlled by the game, and they have some special movement plan But for PvP mode, the another player controls them. So it can be even more I don't know how to explain it, but it's like another way than a standard way.
Yeah. So if you're playing PvE and there's a creature moving, it's got a predictable movement. You know it's going to move by the shortest distance it can towards you, so you can account for that. But if your friend is playing the Overlord, then they won't be moving in a predictable fashion. They're a little more irregular.
In the PvE mode, you can predict the movement. It doesn't make the game easier because the game is designed for for people who can find difficult moments in the game actually. So that's not a big deal that you can predict their movement.
Yeah, well, it doesn't help too much if your quest card is telling you that you have to go to a forest to essentially summon a wolf to kill a wolf, but you need to do that four times. So if you're constantly running people into forests, then you become trapped by either you wait for the minions to come to you or you don't complete the quest. You're forced to engage, which is great. I assume then that the little deck of dice cards is the PvE. That's how you tell what's being rolled against you.
Yeah. Now this dice deck, it's called like this. So instead of rolling dice for the game actually, so whenever the opponent's creature of the Overlord actually should draw dice, you just draw a card from this deck.
Yeah,
and depending on how many dice it should draw this turn, this time, you just count them from top to bottom.
Okay. That's interesting. So it means that even though every card has four dice on it, and there could be many, many successes, you may not actually get them because you're only supposed to be rolling two dice, and the top two may be failures, and the bottom two can be six.
For quicker determination of the opponent's creature's dice rolls. So.
That's a nice little addition. So how long is the Kickstarter running for then?
So Kickstarter is going to be launched on June 9th, and it's going to last 24 days.
Okay. So there's good time.
So it ends at early July.
Plenty of time for people to get involved then if they're interested in jumping on. Have you plans for any stretch goals in there, or is this going to be a relatively self-contained campaign?
Of course, we're happy to provide stretch goals to our backers and to make them be fascinating into opening some new bonuses, etc. So, in our stretch goals will consist of a lot of new game content and also free miniatures. So people with who bonus miniatures, that's their chance to open the new free miniatures for their box.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds fascinating. I can't wait to see the actual Kickstarter launch and people get on board with it. Like I say, I'm lucky enough to have the two starter sets here, so I'm going to be getting in and playing some solo games myself. But the miniatures are just absolutely gorgeous as ever, and the new quest mode has added a very unique way of playing, especially at the moment where I can't play anybody else. So solo mode games are ideal. It'll be nice to see how people pick up the quest mode. I assume this is something then that can be retrofitted onto the existing Legends of Sigmund factions. The quest modes, will there be ways to get quest cards and decks and stuff separately after the campaign?
Separately after the campaign. So everything will be inside the box.
All right. Okay.
So you got yours, for example, starter box. Depending on your faction, for example, you choose a carry or alliance or both, and inside each of them, you got everything necessary for the quest mode as well.
That's great to hear. Giovanni, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise.
I hope your campaign goes from strength to strength, and I hope to speak to you again soon. The next time you are working on something, it would be nice to get you across and actually play a game in the studio when all this madness ends. That would be fun too.
Looking forward to it.
Yep. Okay, folks, we're going to move on here. If you have any questions about Legends of Signum, drop them below. We'll do our best to get answers for you. We'll pop across to the campaign, which should be live now when you're watching this, and possibly back some Akari, because spider elves are awesome.
Did you win one of our prizes? Find out on our prize claim center over at ontabletop.com. Here we list all our previous prizes and those who have won. If you see your username, fill out the form to claim your prize. All prizes must be claimed within 30 days. Congratulations if you're a winner!
So there we are, running on Kickstarter at the moment, and it looks absolutely fantastic. I've been playing about with some of the models and giving the solo game mode a bit of a go myself, so it's a delightful piece of kit, I feel.
Happy days. Mm. Right, Ben, it's your time.
Okay.
That time of the week where you get two shots, two chances, two opportunities to pick the best of the best of the Kickstarters that are
okay.
No pressure there, Ben. No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure at all. Yeah. Right. Okay.
What did you go for us this week?
So the first of these is from a man called John Hodgson, who has previously worked on plenty of other different projects, and he's put together a little bit of an art team and a design team from the group that bought us things like The One Ring and Adventures in Middle Earth. Mm-hmm. People will know from Cubicle 7 and stuff like that. And this is Beowulf: Age of Heroes. So this is a sort of mythic adventure designed to sit alongside the 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons rules.
So this just lays on top of 5th ed rules?
Yeah, so this uses the basic rules from Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition and layers on an entire new world of stuff drawn from Beowulf mythology and that kind of storytelling elements, those kind of storytelling elements. The whole focus of this is that it's primarily designed to be an experience for one GM and one player. Mm-hmm. Now, this doesn't mean that you can't play it with a group if you want to, which is cool, but the idea is that one person sits there as the player and plays through the adventure with the one GM. It's the kind of thing that would be pretty good for this kind of isolationist period that we seem to be in right now. The book itself will contain loads of different sort of updated rules and all kinds of different things in there that'll sort of tie things into the Beowulf mythology. So there's going to be a whole bunch of specific classes in there, new rules for having followers. So you don't just have your main character, but also the followers that go along with them. Obviously, Beowulf during the adventures went off with his own pack of geeks to go and raid and all that kind of thing and defeat Grendel's mother and that kind of stuff as well.
Yes.
You'll also find new rules in there for using things like inspiration within D&D. So you might know that that's the thing that where you get to roll 2d20s and pick the highest and that kind of thing. They've thrown that kind of stuff in there as well, which is really awesome too. They've then tied all of that back into like a massively epic set of artwork and stories and poems and maps and all sorts of other things like that to kind of bring the world to life. I actually had a look through a completely free adventure that you can play through right now from these guys called The Hermit Sanctuary, which includes things like pre-generated characters, maps, guides to making your own hall for you to live in, and lords that, you know, live within these halls as well. So there's huge guides for doing all of that and everything, which is really fantastic. They've even brought on board two actual poets to write proper Beowulf-style poems within the book, which I think is pretty awesome as well.
I love that. So it's a big package of stuff then. It's not just a book or...
So you can download that quick play stuff right now, which is a massive package of things.
Where is the link to the quick play stuff?
You should be able to find it as you go through that page. It is definitely on there. I'll find it and I'll put it in the show notes for you rather than us hunting around for it and stuff like that. But the core book itself will have all of that content pushed back into it as well. So you'll have all that.
If you scroll up there, Lloyd, just keep going there. Hole for a Hero.
Because I'm looking for some examples, because they don't really have any of these things on their actual...
You'll have to... you can look through the book a bit there. But you'll have to download the whole thing and all that kind of stuff to look through it. But I can tell you now, it is full of really awesome stuff.
It has minis!
Yes, as well as that, they've decided that if you want to try and tell the story with miniatures on the tabletop, then they've teamed up with a group of people to create some miniatures that are specifically designed for this adventure. So there's miniatures there for your hero, and then some of the companions that you might meet along the way and all that kind of thing as well. They've also taken a lot of sort of inspiration from things like Adventures in Middle-earth and The One Ring, which are really fascinating role-playing games, because they've put in stuff in there to kind of build on the idea of journeys and travel and the kind of things that happen as you do that. And so making it so that adventures don't just take place within a certain amount of weeks or months, but instead take place over years, potentially, where things sort of waft and wane and all that kind of thing as well. So much like with Beowulf's own history, you know, he grew up, you know, he was that warrior, that raider that went off to go and defeat Grendel and Grendel's mother. And then there was a huge time gap where it jumped to him being older and being the king and all that kind of thing as well. So there's some really awesome stuff mixed in there too. They've also done things like this. So there's the Beowulf compass, which is really awesome, a really highly detailed little compass that they've done, which is just a nice little accessory for you to use in the game as well, which is really cool. And they've got things like dice mats and all sorts of other things too.
I'd use that for like order priority or something like that.
You've also got those things that are like inspiration tokens. So as I was saying, you get given inspiration tokens for doing things in the game to give you advantage and stuff when you're playing D&D. They've got some sort of really nice buff looking versions of those too, which is very cool. So it really is like a sort of little labor of love when it comes to what they put together for this little project here. And if you like the idea of playing something like D&D but in a solo or two player effectively context, then this is a really awesome way to go and do it. One thing they did talk about with this adventure and this sort of system as a whole, I think is really cool, is that just because you're meant to play it with one person doesn't mean you can't then take it and play it with another person and another person and another person. And because of the fact that those people will make different characters and they'll make different decisions, it should be fascinating for that person who's playing the GM every single time they sit down to play it, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. And they said one of the cool things about that is that for every time you do it, you're going to get slightly better at telling the story, and you're going to be able to sort of embellish and throw more things into the mix, all that kind of thing. Yeah. As well. And then maybe take all those kind of inspirations and bring them together into a larger group game as well, which I think is really cool.
That and the fact that it's Beowulf, man.
And it's Beowulf. Who wouldn't want to play as Beowulf or one of Beowulf's companions? It's awesome.
Right, 18 days left on that, guys. So if you're interested, that's one to check out. What's next, Ben?
So next up, we've got one that has kind of existed for a couple of years in the sort of print and play sphere, but it's now been pulled together by Nuts Publishing into a new version of the board game called, and this is Mini Rogue. So a lot of people might be familiar with the idea of roguelike games on PCs and stuff, where you get like a life to go as far as you can, and then when you die, you reset and start again. Well, this is that in card game, board game form. You and another player will take on the role of different characters, and then you'll try and run through a randomly generated dungeon to try and get to the end and defeat the boss and steal the mysterious ruby called Og's Blood. But obviously, if you die on the way, then you have to go back to the start, reset, and go again. So there's that really awesome sort of challenging element to it. The way the game works is that you'll start with your character and your sort of stats on a little board, and with all your resources on it as well. So you've got like things like food and hunger and gold and all that kind of stuff too. Then you'll have a randomly selected deck of stuff, as you can see there, sort of laying out as dungeon rooms, and you'll try and pick your path through the dungeon to try and get to the boss and defeat him or her. The other cool, the sort of thing that makes it hard is that you'll have to make decisions as you go through each of these different rooms. So when maybe you're going to a room full of goblins, do you decide to try and fight them and expend some of your sort of like stamina maybe, or do you try and do it a different way and try and sneak away from them and use that kind of resource instead? And so it's all about trying to balance your resource management and the, you know, sort of like swashbuckling, monster killing sort of style of the game with the kind of route to the end goal and defeating the boss at the end. As well as all their sort of like core game stuff in there that they've kind of refined and tweaked, they've also got a whole bunch of expansions too and some sort of awesome bits and pieces there too. So if you want to try and delve into slightly different adventures, then they've got those options there as well, which is really cool. As I say, Mini Rogue's been a game that's been sort of like out in the kind of print and play sphere for a while. And it's also existing in a couple of different formats too. It's a really, really well-loved game. It's won numerous awards on sort of Board Game Geek and that kind of thing. So if you like the idea of doing a sort of roguelike dungeon delving game with you, with a partner potentially, or by yourself, this is a cool one to go.
A polished looking game, isn't it?
It is. I love the artwork for this. I think the artwork's one of the really fascinating things about this, and the sort of design aesthetic of it. It looks like one of those kind of retro roguelike games that a lot of people are playing on PC and consoles and stuff, which I think is a really nice nudge. So definitely go and check it out.
Mini Rogue, 12 days left by Nuts Publishing. And that wraps us up for this week. So on Sunday morning, head on across to ontabletop.com where XLBS will be kicking off. We have plenty to discuss, I believe. So I'm looking forward to that one, guys. And then remember, if you fancy coming across and joining the unofficial Weekender thread in the forums, where you get to dialogue during the week, and it's a group that gets together and pushes each other on to do a little bit of hobby and to have some fun in the process of it. And then you can, of course, hop on to the Cult of Games and join me on my Wednesday night disco slot.
Remember to comment in for that awesome prize. Share us and run on Facebook, because it really does help.
The sharing on Facebook is working, guys. Please keep that up.
And if you're interested in getting your project in, don't delay for the Spring Clean Challenge, because you could win 50 quid's worth of voucher for the store. Yep. That'd be cool.
Ooh. Right. That has been your weekend. Hopefully we'll see you Sunday. Until next time, have some great gaming.